Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
How about this? In 1 month, 4,000 federal workers joined the American Federation of Government Employees. The Memphis 7, as they call themselves, get a hearing after being fired at Starbucks for unionizing. And today on the show, Senator Sherrod Brown joins us. We talk about the challenges for labor in a right-to-work state. And later on, labor lawyer Joyce Goldstein. Welcome to the Friday, June 10th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And once again, a plug for our revamped website. You missed the show, do check us out at awfpodcast.com, awfpodcast.com. We have three guests on the show today. Senator Sherrod Brown, who usually joins us on the first week of the month, could not join us last week. He'll be with us in a couple of minutes, and he's pretty excited about what's happening in the state of Ohio. Last couple of months, we've been talking about the Intel plant, and what was it, a week ago? Ford Motor Company announced they're going to pretty much double the employees at the Lorain Assembly Plant. This is in Sheffield, Ohio. They're talking about investing $1.5 billion, creating 1,800 union jobs, again, all represented by the United Auto Workers for that assembly plant. And I'll tell you, Ford has been on a roll. We talked to the building trades a couple of days ago about what's happening in the state of Kentucky. They are building a plant that will eventually lead to the hiring of 5,000 UAW jobs, and a similar situation is happening in the state of Tennessee. The Senator is also going to talk about the infrastructure bill. From what I understand, some of that money is starting to filter in the state of Ohio. And part of that infrastructure bill includes charging stations for electric vehicles, because a lot of this production today involves trucks that will be electric. So we need batteries for those trucks, and they're going to be produced by the UAW. Gotta love that. William Gerhart will be joining us later in the show. He's going to be our second guest, actually. And he comes to us from our presenting sponsor, LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America. He's with Local 1268. And get this, he's a 50-year member of that local. Bill grew up in a small town in western Iowa, attended Creighton University, then transferred to the University of Iowa, where he earned a bachelor's degree. He was the job steward at the local, field rep, business manager, secretary, treasurer, and he's involved in the Iowa State Building and Construction Trades Council. Website, by the way, is iowastatebuildingtrades.org. Some of the things we're going to get into: the role of politics in Iowa's building trade success and sometimes failures, challenges. You know, Iowa is a right-to-work state, so it's not an easy go for organizing there. We'll talk about that. And the challenges of retaining and recruiting workers for the skilled trades. That's happening all around America. Good news, though, the Iowa Western Community College Foundation just received a $100,000 grant from Google for general support and the expansion of its skilled trades program. So that's certainly good news. And our third guest on the show is going to be one of our regulars. That's Joyce Goldstein of Joyce Goldstein and Associates. And Joyce primarily focuses on what happens at the National Labor Relations Board. And I'll tell you, with the new administration, the Biden administration, they're not new anymore, but there's been a lot of changes, all good for labor. And Joyce brings a wealth of experience to the table when she analyzes these. She's got 4+ decades of labor law experience. And one of the issues before the board right now is what you wear at work. And in this case, some workers were retaliated against because they wore Black Lives Matter apparel to the job. And apparently, last year, the NLRB took on several cases on the rights of workers to wear Black Lives Matter insignia at work involving Whole Foods, Home Depot, and Kroger. Now, in the Kroger case, which the current brief is concerned with, the labor board accused Kroger of enforcing a dress code that prevented workers from wearing BLM buttons and apparel at work, and then sending several workers home without pay for declining to take off their buttons. Okay? That's one case. The other case involves Vox Media. This goes back to June of 2019 when workers walked off the job. Why? Because they were attempting to organize at Vox Media. They were trying to do that, and apparently one of the bosses said, if one of you tries to unionize, I swear I'll send you back to the salt mine. Now, the boss thought he was joking, all right? The workers didn't think so. So all of a sudden, they took this to the National Labor Relations Board, and some members on the board, and these were Trump appointees, they agreed it was an illegal threat. However, it went beyond the NLRB. Three Republican judges on the Third Circuit Court of Appeal said, no big deal, it's a joke. Get over it. So Joyce is going to talk about that as our second case right here on America's Workforce. Hats off to the American Federation of Government Employees. They welcome, get this, 4,085 federal and Washington, D.C. government employees to the union family last month with a net gain of 436 members, which is the largest monthly net gain in more than 3 years. Thank God they organized, because a lot of members retired, and they do that all the time. Thousands retire. There's a baby boom generation that is turning, 65? Every day, like 10,000 people turn 65, and they figure, okay, we're done. And it's affecting every workforce in America right now. The union credited its locals as the key to success, with the biggest gains coming from new employee orientations. Got a comment here from Dave Kahn. In fact, we've had Dave on the show a couple of times. He's their organizing and membership director. He said, people are joining to empower themselves, and this means our numbers aren't just growing, which they are, but we are building our union with members who want to be active, who want to say, who want to have ownership of their workplace. So looking forward to our next segment with the American Federation of Government Employees. Certainly good news there. A federal judge heard arguments yesterday on a petition from the labor board seeking reinstatement of seven Memphis Starbucks workers who were fired after taking an active role in a unionizing campaign. The fired workers included five members of the union organizing committee. By the way, the folks at that Starbucks decided to go union anyway. The vote was 11-3. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, just a couple of days ago, a federal judge dismissed a labor board request to order the reinstatement of three Starbucks workers who allegedly lost their jobs in retaliation for what? Organizing a union there. All right, let's go to our live line right now. And joining us from Washington is Senator Sherrod Brown. Senator Sherrod Brown, you got to be pretty excited. A lot of good things happening in the state of Ohio, especially northeastern Ohio, with the announcement last week that Ford is pretty much going to double the workforce. I don't know what role you played in it, but I know you've got to be celebrating this news, right?
Yeah, it's a big deal nationally, as you pointed out, and it's we're seeing, and partly because we have a federal government now that Ford recognizes is on the side of the auto industry and the side of auto workers. We've invested bipartisanly with this new president, new Senate, in infrastructure, and the biggest every president for, I don't know, since George Bush Sr. has talked about infrastructure, and nobody's delivered until now. All that makes Ford more optimistic. At the same time, we're seeing national investment in electric vehicles, and it's good. It's really good news in Avon Lake. We've seen, we've known what's happened to the auto industry in Lorain County in northeast Ohio, and we saved the industry a decade ago with President Obama. Now we're seeing a new kind of auto industry, and it's good news.
And, you know, for every auto worker job, there's like 4 to 5, maybe 6 jobs that will be created on top of that. So it's just going to explode. Do we have any assessment? Like, well, I mean, you got the Intel plant in Central Ohio, too. I mean, these are game-changing moves. How long do you think that I know it's hard to predict, but with the right people in place, we have the right people in place with Biden and Marty Walsh as Labor Secretary. How long can this go, in your opinion?
Well, it can be, obviously, you don't know, but we're going to have Intel investment is 5,000 union building trades jobs for a decade. That's the commitment they make. That's the investment they've started. Ford will be 1,800 union jobs in Ohio and, you know, thousands in other places around the country. And as you say, every one of those good paying union jobs translates into other jobs. So it's good news for the country that way. We've got to get through this awful inflation, but we have now. And one of the things I like about this show is talking about unions, and we have more interest among young people, especially. There's more support nationally for unions than there's been in any time since you and I have done, since I've been on the show in 20, 25 years, whatever. And we're seeing more of that. We're seeing winning union elections at Starbucks. Not the same kind of job as a UAW job, but they pay benefits. They will pay a better wage, and a union will give them more control over their schedule. So we're going to see that up and down. And we finally have an administration that's on the side of unions rather than hiring union busting big firm lawyers to kill unions and defeat union drives.
Exactly. I see recently you were in Mahoning County talking about various infrastructure projects. How's this resonating right now? Because I know that bill was signed at the end of last year. I'm just wondering, is that money starting to filter in? What do you know about
starting
that?
and people are excited. I work with mayors, Republican and Democratic mayors, commissioners. I met with the Cincinnati Chamber of Commerce to talk about it yesterday. Major investment in transit. The Cleveland transit system, every single train in that transit system is over 40 years old. We're going to replace the trains and the buses. 60,000 buses around the country, the big city transit buses, almost all of them are diesel operated. Those will transition into no emission engines. We're retraining the mechanics to make sure they keep their jobs and continue to do the work they do, but it's a different skill. Some of the same skills, but a different skill. So we're doing all that. We're going to replace the Ohio has more lead pipes from main water lines going into people's homes. 600,000 of them are lead contaminated. We will replace those as part of this. So all that's starting to happen. The bids on the big bridges in Akron, there's a big bridge over the Cuyahoga. It's called the High Bridge, and the process to replace that is moving. So all of that's going to happen.
And the good thing, just clarify here, these are going to be protected with certain labor rights and possibly go union in many of these jobs, right?
Oh, more than possibly. And in most cases, the building construction jobs will be union. We have a different NLRB. We have a pro-union president. We have a pro-union Senate. We have a Secretary of Labor who's out of the building trades, unlike the last Secretary of Labor in the previous administration, who was a union busting lawyer. My commitment, of course, is that, and I will push, including Intel, once they're going to do union jobs and construction. I'm talking to them about production once that starts. But we're going to be, I go to organizing drives, as you know, and walk picket lines and do all that. The more union jobs there are, the better. You know, as one senator years ago, a guy named Paul Wellstone used to say, when we all do better, we all do better. And if these are good union jobs, not just construction, but production, too, if these are good union jobs, it lifts all boats. And that's the mission here. That's why we had such a good economy. We left many people out in the 40s and 30s, 40s, 50s, well, after the 40s, after the war, and 50s and early 60s. But the economy was stronger because we had good union jobs, and we need to get back to that as much as we can.
I hear you. Union on the outside, union on the inside. I like that. Senator, thank you so much for joining us. You keep up the fight, okay?
All right. Thanks, Flash. See you, buddy.
Once again, Senator Sherrod Brown on our live line. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, Bill Gerhard of the Iowa State Building Trades. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Make sure you get the word union in there. All right, let's go to Iowa right now. And joining us on our live line is Mr. William Gerhard. And William Gerhard, well, he's got many titles and he's got a very rich history. He's a 50-plus year member of LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, the Laborers Union, 500,000 across the country. And he started at 1238. Mr. Gerhard, it's an honor to have someone with such great longevity join America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
We're doing fine. Well, thank you for having me. I look forward to this. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, and you got a lot of titles. Let's see, shop steward, field rep, business manager, secretary, treasurer, Iowa State Building and Construction Trades Council, business development coordinator for Iowa Lesset. We're going to talk about all of that. But you were telling me off the air about that time in America. We're going back to, what, 1970? Think about that. Richard Nixon was in office. Watergate didn't even happen yet. And you decided to get into the trades. What made you go in that direction, sir?
Well, I was working my way through college, and construction seemed like a good way to make some money. my wife was working with a woman who was married to Secretary Treasurer of the local union, and she suggested that I join the local. So I went down to the local and told them I'd like to go to work as a laborer. I got sent out on a job, and the rest is, you just, after that job's done, you go back in the hall, you get sent out on another job, and I managed to work my way through college and work construction. And when I got through college, it dawned on me, there's a lot of reasons for me to work construction. One, I liked being outside. I liked working with my hands. And I liked the people I worked with, the salt of the earth, all the different crafts on the big jobs and everything. So I just decided that it was nice to go to college. I'm glad I went to college. It was a great experience, but that wasn't going to provide a job for me. So I just stuck with construction and then eventually got involved with the union politics and just sort of worked my way up to, you heard of the Peter Principle, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's me. I worked my way up to almost every level of my organization. So
that's awesome. You did eventually get your bachelor's degree. What did you get your degree in?
Well, are you sitting down?
Yeah, I'm sitting down.
Okay. I was a Russian major.
A Russian major?
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Well, I had to take 2 years of foreign language, so I took 2 years of Russian. It was sort of fun. I had some good teachers, and I thought, well, I've already got 2 years invested in this. I might as well just keep taking another course so I don't forget, I don't lose what I already learned. And when it came time to graduate, I had more hours in the Russian department than I did in the history department. So,
wow.
Just flipped over. Yeah, it was convenience, I guess.
Now, how good are you with your Russian today?
It's pretty rusty after years.
You know, with Russia in the spotlight right now with Ukraine, I was just asking. I figured, you know, your timing.
Oh, I know the swear words and everything. I can probably chew them out pretty good.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters right now. This is great. So you had various roles in the union. Union is how many members in 1238 today, by the way?
1238, when I got involved, we probably had 350 members. We just got through with the big building boom centered around the University of Iowa. That's where, and the University of Iowa hospitals, you know, so we had 350 members. And so when I got involved, and then eventually, well, I think I became business manager, business rep, probably in 76. I became business manager in the 80s. And you know what happened in the 80s to construction once Reagan got in there and fired the PATCO workers? We had it was all downhill from about 81 or 82 on, and the local, actually, the membership kept dropping. Unemployment was high. We ended up getting merged into the local in Cedar Rapids, which is 30 miles to the north. So we were a casualty of a trickle down economics.
Yeah, I know about that. Trickle down, or trickled on, I should say. Yeah, that's about what happens when.
Reagan
was a game changer, wasn't he? You mentioned the PATCO strike, and we've done a couple of shows on that because there was a different direction for workers in America when that happened. It was pretty much a green light to corporations that, hey, you know what? If you have union workers, especially if they go on strike, you can get rid of them. Don't worry about it. Just move on.
Ed, I know you deal with a lot of unions. I don't know how familiar you are with the construction trades and the building trades and stuff, but in the early 80s, in Iowa, we had 80% market share of the general construction, general contractors. And then there must have been a seminar they gave at the Contractors Association about how to get rid of your building trade union, because within about 2 years, that flipped completely. We had most of our big union contractors became double-breasted. You know, they closed the door on our union company on a Friday, opened it up on a Monday with a non-union, with a different name, but the same office staff and stuff. So and that was due to the green light that Reagan gave employers to do whatever they needed to do to get out from underneath union contracts.
I didn't realize it was that high at that time. 80%
union density. Yeah, 80%. And then I'm sure you've talked about the Davis-Bacon, you know, the sort of the prevailing wage for construction workers on federal projects. Well, Reagan made an administrative tweak that changed how they calculate whether a county becomes as used as union rates for their prevailing rate, or whether they have to do a weighted average type thing. And that change alone of 99 counties in Iowa, I think prior to the change, 90 of them had the union scale as the prevailing wage. After that, we had probably 11 counties that had had union scale as prevailing rate. So there was a lot of things happening there in that decade. None of it really good.
Mm-hmm. So at one time in America, Iowa was a very union-friendly state, but that has all changed in the last 50 years. Where are we with the union density in the trades today, Bill?
We're probably, probably the basic trades, the ones I'm most familiar with, you know, as opposed to the, you know, the plumbing or the plumbers and pipe fitters and electricians that have licensing issues that help them. We're probably at probably still about 20% here in Iowa. In the urban areas, we're a little higher. In the rural areas, we're a little lower, but I'd say 20, maybe 25% on a good day.
Wow. Now, when did Iowa go right to work? Did it happen in that 50-year period sometime?
It happened. We've always been right to work. It happened the year that, what was it, Taft-Hartley?
Okay, back in the
40s. I was one of the
then.
First states to go right to work. I don't think we've been anything else but right to work.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like 47, 48, something like that.
That's exactly right. I mean, that was before my time, but by about a year, I guess.
Yeah, very sad, very sad. So what's the climate today? Especially, I mean, I want to zero in. We're talking about the building trades in the state of Iowa. You mentioned right. It's like 20%, far cry from 80% when it comes to density.
I had to mention this, too, that I just I was 13 years the president of the Iowa State Building Trades. In last March at our convention, I sat down, let the vice president take over. So I'm pretty familiar with the building trades in general over the past decade and where we're at and things we've tried to do to level the playing field and things we try to do to promote apprenticeship and training and everything. So,
well, let's talk about that. I don't want to dwell on the past here. The past is the past, and it's sad that it happened. Let's be honest. It's unfortunate that it happened, but we got to dig our way out of this. No pun intended.
Yeah, nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, exactly. So what are we doing in the state of Iowa right now?
Well, we're looking at a tsunami of work coming up. I mean, this is going to be a lot of work coming up. You know, we've got solar, we've got carbon capture pipelines, we got big building projects. We've got a lot of stuff coming down the pike, so that's good. Now, a lot of us are in the mode of trying to increase our apprenticeship classes to meet the needs. We're trying to recruit members from the open shop. You know, we're just trying to make sure we have enough people available, so if our contractors get these jobs, we can man them. So that's one thing we've been doing. The other thing we've been doing is to try to, and it's taken about 10 years, try to turn that cruise ship around from people thinking they had to go to college to get a good career. You know, 10 years ago, the building trades decided that we don't want to be the best kept secret. So we tried to really promote registered apprenticeship, and we're doing a good job of that. We have a partnership with an organization called ICANN, Iowa College Access Network. They're in every school in the state. You know, they deal with every school counselor in the state. We work with them. We have a partnership with them. I'm on their board of directors. So there's some options there, you know, options that the parents need to know about. You know, instead of thinking their kid's got to go get a BA degree to make some good money, they find out a little bit about the different crafts and the apprentice programs and, you know, what a person can make once he becomes a journey person. So it's been an eye-opener for parents. Their jaws drop, really, when they see what the end result is in terms of wages and fringe benefits. So that's been a really good situation there.
As far as the cost of college, and you and I were talking off the air back in the early 70s or late 60s, I mean, college was very, very affordable. Not the case today. I'm just wondering, because of the high cost of college today, do you think that's an incentive for people to get into trades right now?
I think it's a great incentive. I mean, I don't know how the average family, average kid does it, really. If you take a student loan out, when you graduate, it's like you have a mortgage on a house, but you don't have the house. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big incentive. I think parents are looking at alternatives. And I tell you, we go to the Iowa School Counselors Association convention each year. We, have a booth, and we always do a breakout workshop. And that workshop is filled with school counselors. They are so thirsty for information about careers where kids don't have to go to college. I mean, they're excited about having the knowledge that, hey, you know, there's like 15 different crafts and 15 different apprentice programs and that they can refer their kids to. It's great. I think we're starting to turn that cruise ship around and make, you know, some of the toughest is parents. You know, of course, they want their kids to go to college because they think that's the ticket out, you know, the ticket for success. But
sure,
yeah, I think slowly but surely we're working that way.
Well, it's good to hear that, because most of the counselors are still pushing to go to college, and a lot of the schools get rated on how many kids they send to college. So that's right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's how they measure their success, how many kids that go to college.
Right. You know what, Bill? I got to take a quick break here. Bill Gerhard joining us on our live line. He comes to us from Western Iowa. He grew up in Western Iowa, and he's the business development director for Iowa Lesset. And he's also a member of the State Building Trades. Website is iowastatebuildingtrades.org. 50-plus year member of LIUNA. Got to give them a plug, our presenting sponsor, Laborers International Union of North America. That would be Local 1238 in Iowa. Later in the show, Joyce Goldstein will be joining us, analyzing some decisions and some cases at the National Labor Relations Board. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. Keep those five-star ratings coming. We certainly do appreciate that. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go back to Western Iowa, and joining us on our live line today is Bill Gerhard, 50-plus year member of Laborers International. We're talking about Local 1238 in Iowa, right-to-work state since the late 40s. Not an easy go for labor, but they're managing. They're moving forward. And Bill's got a lot of titles, currently chair of the Iowa Laborers Health and Welfare Fund, Vice President of the Iowa Federation of Labor, of course, part of the AFL-CIO, and Business Development Coordinator for Iowa Lesset. Let's talk about that. Lesset, by the way, is L-E-C-E-T, which is a labor management trust. Bill, can you give us a little detail on how that works? Because I know LIUNA is very, very proficient in that area. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, LIUNA actually... I don't want to say created their Lesset programs, but we were one of the first international unions to have a program to do what Lesset does. It's jointly administered multi-employer trust, like you said. You know, half the board is management and half the board is laborers. And it's the business development labor management arm of LIUNA. We spend most of our time trying to create jobs, find jobs, get information, work with the movers and shakers. We meet with the utility companies. We meet with the county board of supervisors, city council, school boards, universities, anyone that does construction projects, we try to meet with, and we try to encourage them to use our contractors. And, of course, by using our contractors, that means our laborers become employed. So It's worthwhile. We can probably move in different circles than the local union business managers do, and so it's been it's been a great force here in Iowa for creating jobs for laborers.
Do they account for the jobs that are created through a program like that? Is there any data on that or what?
Not really. It's all sort of soft data. I mean, it's just for example, let me. It would have been about 8 or 9 years ago. We helped Economic Development Board promote a mega project down in Weaver, Iowa, fertilizer plant. A lot of people were against it because they gave huge tax incentives for this contractor to come and build this project. We were supportive of it because we built stuff. And so were we critical in it getting built? Maybe not, but we were certainly helpful. But we had about 800 laborers on the job. The carpenters had like 1,000 carpenters. There must have been 50 cranes there for a 2 or 3 year period. It created a lot of jobs. I mean, that's what we like to see. So we like to be part of that. Now, whether we're the critical part, I don't know. But if we're not, you've heard that phrase, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So
yep.
You have to be at the table.
You want to be at the table, no doubt about that. I want to talk a little bit, and you touched on this briefly in the first segment, about retaining and recruiting workers, and you touched on your apprenticeship program, and there's a lot of opportunities. I mean, with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, that's going to be huge. I mean, you with solar, wind, climate change, and all that kind of stuff, EV charging stations, there's so much going on. But at the same time, there's a lot of workers retiring. I think every day, like 10,000 people turn 65. And, you know, and in the trades, you know, after 30-plus years, maybe 40 years, you're beat up pretty good. I mean, that's rough work, depending on what you're doing, of course. But, I mean, some trades are a little tougher than others. Bill, with that being said, what's the future like in the state of Iowa? How do you answer that?
Well, all crafts are looking for workers. You know, we can train apprentices, so everyone's up their game in the apprentice programs. You know, we're out talking to open shop workers that are working for a non-union contractor, thinking they might like to have a better pay and better fringe benefits, so we're doing that constantly. We've also have a partnership with the University of Iowa Labor Center with a quality pre-apprentice program where the goal is to reach into underserved communities and encourage them to think about the trades for a career and give them some training so that they're able to, you know, pass the entrance test or pass the interview process and get into the apprentice programs. You know, we're talking about people of color. We're talking about women and, you know, Native Americans, veterans returning from service, people just getting out of prison, you know, people that we probably haven't seen on the construction site as much as we should have. So
yeah,
we're spending a large amount of time going to that source and getting people, and hopefully that's going to help the situation. It's going to help diversify the workplace,
oh,
too,
sure,
which we've always been criticized for, so that's a good thing.
What about for vets? I Helmets for Hard Hats is a big national
program.
Yeah,
we work closely with Helmets for Hard Hats. In Iowa, we don't have any military bases. We've got a National Guard, a large National Guard, in Iowa. But we don't have any military bases, so it's pretty much catch-as-catch-can. Now, each county has a veterans agency works for the county, so we deal with them, and they try to steer people returning from the service to us, but it's not a huge source.
I know some of the trades are real proactive. I know the UA, United Association, has their Veterans and Piping program, which has been very, very successful. So, and there's a lot of vets, too. They're, you know, when they come back from active duty, they just don't know where to go. And the trades are dirt. You know, you show up on time, you work hard, you learn a lot of those skills in the military that can come over to the trade. So it's certainly good.
Yeah, they're well trained on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. One more question here before you go. Organizing. Iowa, let's be honest here, tough state, right-to-work state since the late 40s. How has that, in your opinion, affecting organizing today? What's your thoughts?
Well, here's my thoughts. And I live in eastern Iowa now. I'm pretty close to the Illinois border. And in Illinois, they've got a lot of state laws that really promote the building trades. I mean, it's easier for a contractor to be union in Illinois than be non-union. Now, here in Iowa, it's just the opposite. We've had the Republicans run our government probably for the past decade and many, many years before that on and off. And a lot of bills they passed are really detrimental to us. For example, they passed a ban on PLAs. You know, the federal government allows PLAs, private industry allows PLAs. Well, Iowa does it on their projects. So, and then they also, this doesn't affect our people, but it does in a way. Our minimum wage is the federal minimum wage, $7.25. A lot of counties decided that wasn't enough, so counties around the progressive counties, the urban counties around the state, raised the minimum wage, you know, over X number of years to be $15. Well, the Republicans at the state house decided that didn't seem right to them, so they passed a law saying that counties that could no longer, you know, the heck with home rule, the counties could no longer make any laws that affected wages. So.
Right.
That shot that. And it seems like every time we find a way that could level the playing field, it gets to the state house and they pass a law against it. Now, it's a lot like you remember all the stuff that went on in Wisconsin and everything, and with the public sector bargaining. A lot of our building trade unions also represent public sector people. The laborers do, the painters do, the carpenters do, the operators do. We all have bargaining units there that are, you know, the road crews for counties or the sheriff's department here and there or school bus drivers, whatever. Well, our public sector laws were established in the 70s with a Republican governor, Republican House and Senate. That's called Chapter 20. And it set up the fact that you could have unions in the public sector. And those were great laws. Well, I guess they were too good because about 5 years ago, the same trifecta of Republicans decided to gut them. So now it's almost disseminated public sector workers. So that's the backdrop here in Iowa. Anytime, it's like they want us to be a low wage state. They want us to compete with South Dakota or whatever, and they'll do everything they can to sort of thwart our efforts. But I guess we just keep coming back. We're a little bit like rust, you know. We don't go away.
That's a good analogy there. All right, Bill, I'm going to leave it on that note. Bill Gerhard with the Iowa State Building Trades, iowastatebuildingtrades.org. He's currently vice president of the Iowa Federation of Labor, all part of the AFL-CIO, and 50-plus year member of Laborers International. God bless you for hanging in there that long, brother, and stay in touch with us, okay?
I'd love to. Thanks.
You got it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Joyce Goldstein's going to talk labor law coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number three right now. Joining us on our live line, one of our regulars, Joyce Goldstein. JoyceGoldsteinLaw.com is a website, 40-plus years dealing with labor law. And I'll tell you, I am jealous, girl. Last night, she was out to dinner with, what is it, Chris Smalls, the guy that organized the Amazon campaign in New York, Staten Island, at the JFK 8 warehouse. Joyce Goldstein, welcome to the show. How did this happen last night? You got to talk to me about that.
Thanks. Oh, yeah. So it was so fun. So Chris Smalls was the guest of the North Shore Federation of Labor in Cleveland, and he spoke at UAW Local 1250's hall, and to really a packed crowd. He's so inspirational. You could see really how he has been successful at organizing his own workplace at Amazon, where obviously he was fired 2 years ago,
right.
But has just led such a successful campaign there. And I think he's, you know, he's very ambitious about trying to organize other Amazon workers and help other workers throughout the country. And so he was in Cleveland and gave a great talk, and he's really hopefully a whole new generation of labor leader.
In a very
different and effective way.
Oh, he's an organizing rock star, no doubt about that. And the numbers are bearing that out. Young people today are organizing like never before. Maybe not like the 30s, maybe compared to the 30s. I don't have data on that, but it's really exciting to see what's going on. Let's talk about this NLRB case here, which really caught my attention and yours as well. And what this deals with is what you wear at work may be cause for consternation from your employer. In this case, it was a Black Lives Matter attire, and the company that didn't like it was Kroger, which used to have a presence in northeastern Ohio. They're in southern part of the state, I believe, right now. But what's the story here, Joyce?
Well, there was a rule that Kroger had that prohibited employees from wearing Black Lives Matter buttons in particular. And this is not just unique to Kroger. There are these kinds of rules exist for other employers, and the NLRB has been taking on those employers as well, including Home Depot and Whole Foods. And really a couple issues. And one is an issue of whether employers are permitted to have these kinds of rules in their handbooks. And then the second is, how about if they actually enforce those rules? And here what had happened in the Kroger case was that they had a rule prohibiting the buttons, and people were wearing the BLM buttons and were sent home from work because they refused to take them off. Although Kroger disputes that fact, the Kroger obviously admits that they have the rule in the books, but didn't admit that they had sent people home for refusing to take them off. But in any case, there was a hearing over that issue, and it went to trial. And the newest issue that you're talking about is that their briefs were just filed. There was a 115-page post-hearing brief filed by the NLRB lawyers on this, and similarly, a 154-page brief filed by Kroger's after the trial. And so much is focused on this question of whether there is a protected right to wear BLM buttons. And what it really focuses on is whether the buttons are just a general political statement, or which is what Kroger is arguing, and that they're alienating and that they pose a safety risk. And it's not entirely clear why a button would pose a safety risk, but that's what they argued.
Really?
And that it's, you know, dangerous precedent and that sort of stuff. And what on the other side of that, what the general counsel of the NLRB is arguing, as well as the union, is that it's protected speech, that the BLM movement includes fighting racism everywhere, that it's not just focused on political issues or police brutality issues, but that racism affects everyone everywhere, including, and in this case, especially in the workplace. Uh-huh. And so by wearing these buttons, that people are expressing their views of solidarity and mutual support of other employees. And that's the issue. If the buttons touch on economic inequality in employment or at work, then it should be protected speech. And what the UFCW argued, I think pretty succinctly, said, you know, and this is a quote, when black employees screamed out through a union button that their lives matter at work and everywhere else, Section 7 of the NLRA shielded them from employer interference. And therein lies the issue. And we will see.
So the NLRB feels that they are protected to wear those buttons at work, and this case is ongoing right now. All right, Joyce, let's move on here. The other case I know you want to talk about is joking at work. And apparently this involves a group of workers going back to June of 2019 at Vox Media. And they were organizing, thinking about, hey, you know what? Conditions here, we need to improve them. Let's go union. But then somebody at the company kind of said, like, well, if you try to unionize, I swear I'll send you back to the salt mine. And I guess he thought he was joking, but the workers didn't think so. What's at play here, Joyce?
So the workers at Vox Media staged a walkout, as you said. And then what happened in response to that was the publisher of The Federalist, which is an online news magazine, very conservative. The publisher of The Federalist, in response to the walkout of at Vox Media, then said to his own employee that if they tried to unionize, he would send them to the salt mine. And he then claimed it was a joke and it wasn't a threat. The NLRB found just saying that to, you know, if workers unionize that they're going to be sent to the salt mine is not a joke and that's a threat. What was a little tricky in this case was that the actual workers at the Federalist, at the online news magazine, the conservative one, they did not actually say that they felt threatened. And so the question was, one of the questions in that case was, did it matter what was the subjective experience of the employees of the Federalist? Because here the complaint about the threat, the sending back to the salt mine, was actually filed by someone other than a Federalist employee. And so when the NLRB found that that threat was just on its face a threat and not a joke, the company argued, well, our particular workers knew it was a joke and they didn't take it as a serious threat. And so based on that, or based on the fact that the NLRB never presented actual evidence that anybody in particular felt threatened by the threat, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, Trump appointees, threw the case out and rejected the finding of the NLRB, saying that those words in itself were just a per se violation. How could that not be viewed as a threat? So, So a threat is not a threat if a threat could be a joke in certain circumstances. And that's what the Court of Appeals found here.
It's interesting to note that the Trump Labor Board also agreed that it was an illegal threat. But in this case, the judges, Republican judges on the Third Circuit, said, don't worry. It's just a joke. Don't worry about it. Just move on. All right. Always interesting stuff from you. Joyce Goldstein and Associates, joycegoldsteinlaw.com. Got to give the phone number here, 216-771-6633, and she practices all over the place, meeting all kind of organizing rock stars like Chris Smalls at Amazon. You take care. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you. You too.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the postal workers and the Florida Labor Council. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.